Well, it's time for Industry Night. We were going to do this last night, but with Martin Luther King Day, we switched it till tonight. My next guest is the author of the new book, Craft Coffee, A Manual. In it, Jessica Eastoe gives the reader a history lesson on coffee, from the early colonists frying coffee beans to our obsession with cream and sugar. Eastoe maps the history but also talks about the new movement dedicated to better understanding the bean and making the perfect cup of coffee at home. And this is really a segment for all of us, as a 2014 study found that over 60% of Americans drink coffee on a daily basis. The book is great, and I'm this close to throwing away my old drip coffee machine and joining the craft coffee revolution. This close. Jessica Eastoe, welcome to The Download.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to meet you. All right, so first off, writing this book, your husband is sort of a craft coffee connoisseur. Talk about what made you write this book to essentially craft coffee, a manual, brewing a better cup at home.
So I kind of, since my husband is in the craft coffee industry, I sort of have an outsider-insider perspective into it. And I had been brewing coffee at home before I met him, and he taught me a lot of things along the way. But being involved in it, I kind of started to realize that there's a gap between what craft coffee professionals know and sort of what consumers understand. And I thought of writing a book sort of in layman's terms and laying it all out for people to sort of pick and choose what they care to know about would be a good way to sort of close that.
Well, gap. It's interesting, too, because it was fun to hear about all the obviously in the book there's an index of all the terminology that a lot of people are intimidated by when it comes to brewing coffee. But one of the names that I remember is specialty coffee. This idea that used to be called what wasn't sold in the stores, specialty coffee. And that needs to change at a certain point. It's changed and morphed into craft coffee because there's so many independent brewers out there that are actually doing things and creating new ways to brew coffee.
Yeah, so the coffee, I guess, as it's understood, is sort of broken up into three different waves. So the first wave was really from the time when big coffee companies like Folgers and Maxwell House started rising to prominence, and it was all about delivering caffeine to the masses in the most convenient way possible. And then in the late 60s and the 70s, the second wave emerged, and it was the specialty coffee movement, and it was focused on high quality coffee. Not all beans are the same, and that was really led by places like Starbucks and Peet's Coffee.
Right. I didn't realize that Starbucks went as far back. It was 1971 or 1968 in that area where I think Starbucks is a pure 90s phenomenon or 2000s phenomenon, but it's been around for a long time.
Yeah, and so the umbrella of specialty coffee, after a while, there was a new branch, what some people call third wave coffee, what I call craft coffee, sort of emerged under the umbrella of specialty coffee. So craft coffee is specialty coffee, but it just kind of has a different ethos. So there are a few distinguishing characteristics, which you sort of already mentioned. These craft coffee professionals tend to elevate the status of the bean as an ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
They care about where it came from, how it was processed.
Ethics play a big role in craft coffee.
For sure. And they believe that the highest skill level at every stage of the process results in the best possible cup of coffee. So that goes all the way from the producers to the processors, to the roasters, and then finally to people like us, the brewers, or the professional counterpart baristas.
I always think about it, and you know, there were so many. I worked at a Starbucks. I worked in independent coffee shops as well in my life, and I remember there being an emphasis and an understanding, or at least an education, that was much more high end than you would think. Meaning, this is what this bean is. This is how to treat the bean. This is how long it can be here. This is how you don't really get into espresso in the book, but this is how long this should take for the shot. But there's so many things that go into it that a lot of consumers don't even think about, and I wonder how much of that gets in the way of them exploring it because they're just afraid of what they don't know.
Yeah, I think like the jargon that comes around with it, or all this new terminology, can be intimidating. So I talk about in the book how Starbucks was around and kicking since before I started drinking coffee. And so a lot of us have grown up already knowing Starbucks terminology because they sort of created their own thing. And now there's this new kind of coffee, and you have to learn all that stuff over again because it's just a little bit different. And whenever people start talking about doing things better or the right way to do things, or, you know, just the idea that you can make something high quality, people sometimes think, well, I won't be able to do that, or it's too complicated.
Another big part of this book, Craft Coffee, a Manual, Brewing a Better Cup at Home, Jessica Isto in studio tonight, has to do with the history. I kind of mentioned the idea of the colonists at the beginning frying over fire coffee beans. Like, that was the way they would do it. And they would just, put it into a cup and sweeten it whatever way possible. But there is a long history of America with the coffee bean, even though it's not really indigenous to this area.
Yeah, so I think probably, I mean, it's hard to tell because there's not a lot of recorded history, but coffee has probably been a part of colonial life since, you know, colonists came over, because it was introduced to Britain, I think, in like the 16th century. But it really started to gain traction after the Boston Tea Party.
That's right, because we threw the tea, say we don't want the tea, so we're going to go, let's try this other drink.
Right. And during that time, coffee was thought of, well, it still is, it's a commodity. It's traded just like wheat or corn or anything else. And the companies focused on cheap caffeine, and that was basically it. And people usually, like at the beginning, they would boil their coffee with water, which resulted in burnt coffee.
Right. The diner style that we kind of know. Right.
And, you know, it's interesting, I think, doing the research for this book, I realized that a lot of these manual devices, that's sort of what I focus on in the book, is hand-making coffee rather than using an electric coffee machine. A lot of these devices have been around for a really long time, but there are certain circumstances in the United States where they never really had to rise to prominence. So after people realized they didn't have to boil coffee, like percolators were really popular. Then the electric percolator was invented. And then soon after that, electricity sort of proliferated everything. And then electric drip coffee makers were like the thing that people used because it's the easiest.
And what I want to do, we'll take a break here, but when we come back, I want to talk about, you know, I only can talk about my own experience, and I think, or my family's experience, where, yeah, it was an electronic drip coffee machine. And frankly, it all tastes the same. I mean, you put it in, it doesn't matter if it's the bottom shelf brand or the top shelf brand, you put it in there and it comes out and the water and you're like, okay, it's hot and it's caffeine. And there hasn't been much of an adventurous palate on my end to try something different or to think that it could be better. And reading your book, I realized that there's a lot of opportunity to explore new ways to think about coffee that aren't necessarily going to A, break the bank, or B, take 2.5 hours to put together. Jessica Isto, my guest, Craft Coffee, a Manual, Brewing a Better Cup at Home. We'll continue the conversation, a Tuesday night industry night segment, talking coffee. Stay with us. Continuing with our Industry Night segment here on The Download, 720 WGN, I'm Justin Kaufman. Craft Coffee, a Manual, Brewing a Better Cup at Home. Jessica Isto is my guest. She's the author of the book that just came out. Okay, so we talked about the history, kind of got into it. We kind of skipped cream and sugar. That seems to be amazing how that was really just used. That was society giving up that coffee tastes good, right? That was
basically, yeah.
So we've covered that. That's good. All right, so let's talk about the Brewing a Better Cup at Home. You've charmed me, and I am done with my electric drip coffee machine. It's gone. Right? Okay. It's thrown out the window. And I'm going to transition to a manual style. The first thing, and as people listening to this, this is important. This is right up there with the things you need to know, is that there's a spectrum. There's a coffee enthusiasm spectrum. And you need to know where you're at on that spectrum and make your decisions based on that.
Yeah, I think that's important because coffee shouldn't be hard or complicated, and you should do whatever you feel comfortable with. So in the book, I sort of give suggestions about, like, what is your budget? How much time do you want to invest? How complicated do you want your skill set to be. And there are options for all stages of the spectrum.
And that's important because a lot of people get intimidated when they go, I want to go and do something handmade or something a little bit more sophisticated. I guess I'll go to the high end. And then you find yourself spending 35 minutes, 40 minutes making a cup of coffee, and then you realize that this is not for you. It's in the book, and you can understand it. But the point being that you need to know where you're at.
Right.
Essentially, that's it. All right, so we're improving brew at home. Let's talk about the coffee bean right there. Why don't we start there? You talk about roast versus origin. You talk about it kind of plays with the third wave with what we were talking about. But why don't we start with the coffee bean?
So if I were going to give you advice for how to improve your coffee right now, I would say buy whole fresh beans from a craft roaster, so high quality beans. And one of the reasons why I recommend that is because third wave beans tend to be roasted differently than second wave, and it emphasizes origin.
So third wave would be independent shops in Chicago, coffee shops. Second wave, which you just mentioned, that would be the Starbucks, the Caribou Coffees, the Pete's, things like that.
Exactly. And craft coffee shops or third wave shops, they emphasize what we call origin character, and that's all the different flavors of the bean. Because beans, just like wine, can taste different depending on where they come from and what kind of variety.
And it's more sophisticated. You feel or you could taste that distinction when you're talking about the third wave.
Right. And second wave, there's a preference towards roast character, which is like the taste of the process, the taste of the heat, the taste of the carbonization. It's kind of like whiskey or bourbon, you're tasting the wood, the process of it being produced.
Right.
So with manual brewing, you have control over every part of it, and so you can tease out those nuances and those flavors from the lighter roasted beans.
Okay, so when we talk about teasing that flavor out, we're talking about improving. We need to talk about the grind.
Right.
So let's go there, because this is where this falls into the category of accuracy. Mm-hmm. And this is where I, even with the already pre-grinded processed stuff that I get from the Target or whatever, I'm the only add that I add is I'm no longer doing it by teaspoons or tablespoons. I'm just kind of pouring it in there and going, all right, I'm gonna put some water in and see if this works. And I realized that reading the book that's where I need to get better.
Yeah, accuracy is important, so you know what you need to do the next time to improve it. And if there's no record of exactly how much, you know, beans you use or exactly how much water, then you won't know how to change it. So back to grind size. So I recommend that you grind the whole beans fresh, and you grind it to the right size for your device. So depending on what device you pick, it's optimized with a different grind size, and I have that all in the book. And that has to do with how long the water is in contact with the coffee, and that's what actually extracts the flavor from the coffee, is the water spending time going inside the beans and drawing out the flavor. So the coarser the grind, the longer and harder it is for water to go into the coffee and take out the flavor, and the smaller the size, the easier it is. It's just like cooking any other thing. If you chop up your vegetables very small, they'll cook faster. The same concept applies to coffee. But the thing to remember about coffee is there's a lot of different flavor particles, and they all extract at different rates.
Right. And they extract at different times when it comes to the actual process of making the cup of coffee.
Exactly. So if you want to talk about the two extremes of quote-unquote bad coffee, you often hear the term under-extracted or over-extracted. And all that means is if the water doesn't spend enough time with the coffee, there'll be an over-concentration of the flavors that dissolve quicker, which tend to be very acidic or sour. And so you get that kind of nasty, sickly taste of under-extracted coffee.
It almost falls in that. People a lot of times will mistake that for strong coffee or weak coffee, right? That's what they get that taste, that, and I got this term from your mouth feel, mm-hmm. How it tastes in your mouth. But that doesn't necessarily mean how strong or how weak the coffee it is. It's just how developed the cup of coffee is.
Right. So, and it's interesting too. So like a sour note is associated with under-extracted coffee, and overly bitter or astringent flavors are associated with over-extracted coffee, or water that has spent too much time pulling out flavors. They tend to be bitter at the end and it overwhelms everything. But people often get acidity and bitterness confused. They're both not very pleasant, so it doesn't matter in the end. But when you know that your water needs to spend more time with the coffee or it needs to spend less time, then it's easier to sort of get it where you like it to be.
Okay, so I'm just the stuff that I wrote down from the book, filters, the grinders, the scales, the kettles. I mean, there's a lot that goes into this. And, you know, I'm starting to sweat a little bit at my financial investment into this. Talk about, you know, what this all costs. I mean, for someone to go to the high end, to the third wave roaster, to be able to have this very specific kind of, you know, handmade coffee stuff, do you start getting into a sophisticated price range?
I think you can keep it inexpensive. And if you're not willing to invest, which I wouldn't be personally, if I didn't know I was going to use the equipment all the time, the thing I recommend is using a French press, because someone usually has that like in the back of their cabinet and they never use it.
I've got one.
Yeah. Back of my cabinets. And French presses are great because you don't need a fancy kettle, because it's basically just like steeping tea. And most people have a kettle already. So then all I recommend that you need is a nice grinder, which is a burr grinder, as opposed to a blade grinder, which is what most people have. A burr grinder.
Burr grinder?
Yeah, B-U-R-R. It's just like how grains are ground at a mill. There's two metal plates, and they go farther apart or closer together for larger or smaller pieces, it's very even. But if you don't want to spend that much money, because they can be $100, $200, $300, you could get a hand crank model, and you can get that for like $20.
Okay, so that's what I'm doing. I'm getting a burr grinder. I'm going to go to the third wave craft roaster shop, right, to get the actual bean. I'm going to grind it. I'm going to use my French press.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm going to have to do, and this is a big part of when you talk about accuracy, is to experiment. I'm going to have to learn about how much is actually in there as opposed to how much the water is coming in, and each time be able to catalog, either mentally or in some way, if I want to write it down, figure out a way to adjust as each day moves forward.
Right. I think one thing to keep in mind is coffee is highly variable, like depending on what kind you get and even what day you're using it, because coffee goes stale really quickly, and it has a lot of volatile compounds in it, which changes. So you sort of have to, if you want to optimize your cup, you tweak it a little bit each time. Or you don't, if you don't want to. I mean, I use the specs that I have in my book, specs meaning specifications about like the time and how much to use and such. And if it tastes good enough, like you don't have to keep at it if you don't want to.
So you're forcing me right back to the Target?
Well,
you're telling me try it for a couple of days. If it doesn't work out, go back to your second wave.
Well, I think if you have the book and you use the instructions, you're going to be at the baseline. And then if you want to tweak it, or if you want to, like, say, make twice as much as you made the day before, then you might have to go back and forth a little bit. But the great thing is, once you kind of understand how grind size affects coffee and how time affects coffee, it's pretty easy to make the best cup each day.
Jessica Isto is the author of Craft Coffee, A Manual, Brewing a Better Cup at Home. This is a great book, and I will check back in with you. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to have you back on the show, and I'll tell you what I learned in a couple of months. Jessica, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.